This is Ozarks at Large. Mexico's history over the past five centuries is rich, and according to Dr. Ethelia Ruiz Medrano, misunderstood, both in Mexico and outside of the country. She's written 11 books about her native country, examining the legacy of Mexico's indigenous people and the complicated relationships with European newcomers. She spent a dozen years researching her latest book, Indigenous Manuscripts, Paintings, and Politics in Mexico, Colonial and National Records. In the book, she uses historical documents, art, and other artifacts to offer a reconstructed view of the confrontations between indigenous people and Spanish colonial authorities beginning in the 16th century. Dr. Medrano spoke on the University of Arkansas campus last night as the guest of the U of A's Latin American and Latino Studies program. Before her address, she came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. She says she was inspired to write her latest book because the plight of Mexico's indigenous people is generally relegated into one of two tropes: people victimized by events outside of their control, or savages conquered by Europeans. Rather, she argues, the historical records show there were negotiations and agreements written by the Indians themselves to defend their lands.
What was most difficult of it is that most specialists, especially in Latin America, well, especially in Mexico, and also colleagues from other places, other countries, always understand indigenous communities as a trap in a very sad destiny, in a very destructive destiny, and everything is lost, and they are like, if they were in Noah's Ark, you know, fighting in the waves, and it's their victims, they will not survive. And, you know, this idea of being victims and knowing that I have indigenous blood, I started to think if we are a country of victims, then we deserve what happens to us. But how about if we have tried and if we had fought? And it was just the context, the things that happened, but that we try to negotiate. We try to go out. I mean, we try to get it back to what belonged to us. And so my ancestors. And as soon as I started thinking about that and reading the literature of the subject, I saw that there were two ideas about this. One that was that this poor indigenous people, they are like sheep. You know, they're so little, so small, so beautiful. It's so terrible that they kill them all. And then I thought, okay, and what is more than 100 million Mexicans doing over here if we got killed? So it didn't happen. And on the other side is that, oh, now, these were savages. They were always making war. I mean, they couldn't stop killing each other. I mean, they deserve what happened. I mean, they just wanted to eat the Spaniards for breakfast or lunch. I mean, that can't be. I mean, we can't have those kind of people around. Then I said, no, there must be a middle thing that has to do with constructing civilization, that has to do with something, as Levi-Strauss found out, about indigenous religions in the Amazonian, that not all is material, that what is in the head of the people has to do with creating civilization, because it's a complex mind, it's a complex religion, it's a complex way of negotiating things, even if the doors are closed. And that's what indigenous people do and have done. It doesn't mean that they didn't defend themselves. They were warriors. I mean, they did defend, and they were defeated. But the stories that I care for is a story of trying to struggle for a negotiation, to open doors, not to give up, try to have, you know, think of their descendants and of their future. And in that sense, is a success story. And for that, you have to go 500 years, and you have to use a lot of sources, not only painted sources, but also reading sources in indigenous language, and you have to do field work. Because to say, oh, you know, globalization is awful, and, well, that's neoliberalism, oh, sorry for those poor things. Yeah, I just have to say it, you know? That's easy. But to prove the other thing, you really need to work a lot. because nobody will believe it that easily.
You mentioned that to tell this historical story of that not savages, not victims, but people who negotiated and looked out for themselves, that you had many different sources. Sources that span centuries. So what kind of – just give me an example of a couple of sources that you would be able to find.
Well, we have like more than 5,000 litigation suits files in the Archive of Mexico. And then you have the most important archives in Latin America and Mexico. Small towns can have like a room full of papers. And then you have specialized archives for this and that. And then we have the Imperial Archive. That is the Archive of Indias. Because Spain generated, well, Castilla generated in 16th century the most powerful bureaucracy machine in the world. It was a giant. And so we have thousands of sources there that had to do with indigenous people sending letters in Nahuatl or in other indigenous languages, and then themselves translated to Spanish or Latin so that the Council of Indias, which was on charge by the Spanish ruler of all the matters of their colonies in what is now Latin America, except Brazil, will read it and then do a resume and tell the king, okay, the lords are asking for this and this and this. So there are thousands and thousands of things, and then of papers. And then I have to cross many of this with pictographical native paintings. I don't know how you say that. I had the word codices, codex. Native paintings that were used for trials. They were like what you say, uses and costumes that were accepted by Spanish courts, which mean their languages, all their languages. They had translators for that. And their paintings. The paintings, the codices, were not only made for religious purposes or for counting purposes. They were also made to tell the stories in drawings, in hieroglyphics, in glyphics, of what was going on. This is our land. This is a person who wants to take it. And there were thousands of those. I mean, more than thousands. And we still have hundreds of them all over Mexico, and I mean, we have them even in collections like France, with the trial attached in written in Spanish.
Is there a sense among the communities that are heavily populated by indigenous people of that local history? Is that story, that narrative known?
Oh, yes. Yes, I have recuperated a lot. I mean, it has changed. Of course, it's very dynamical, like all orality. And it has a purpose. I mean, it's not that, like, you sit down and with the people or the authorities and or the old people and say, well, here's a tape recorder, just go and hit it, you know. Let's start from the beginning. You don't, I mean, it's, history is also has to do with, Frank Solomon says, who is a great specialist in Peru, it involves our five senses, smell, sight, our hearing of music. So history has to do also for them as a complex narrative where smells are important, like different kind of foods for the festivals that bring the memory back. And also sometimes alcohol, some kind of special alcohol. And then their senses, the feeling of the leaves where they arrange everything for the feasts. And also the things, smells make you go back. And the music and the dancing is a very complex narrative. And they have a lot of material like codices, pyramids, and they know exactly. So maybe sometimes it happens that they won't tell you like, oh, yes, this is a codice, interesting, these rulers are this and that. And you show them a codex, 500-year-old, only the photocopies because it's out of their town since 19th century. It's not like that. But they will always, there will be always an old person who will say, oh, yes, yes. My grandmother told me about the kings. And you see the codicil, and you know that is a genealogical codicil. How does that lady know? She's 90. So many things I have recuperated, and they can go very far away, back. And if you know history, if you know the sources, you can connect them. But yes, they can go deep.
How did you know you were done? If you spent 12 years doing this, how did you know when it was time to?
Well, it's just that I thought, if I keep, you know, searching, I will always have something to add, and I will never finish. And I really want to say, I mean, I have to do it. It will have a lot of mistakes. Only God is perfect. So, you know, it's better to just throw it to the world and see if somebody, you know, takes the message in the bottle and reads it and say, oh, okay, interesting. And that's it. So I just said, yeah, it's enough. I mean, every time I say it, I won't find another cut. They say, oh, you know, in that little village they have one. Okay, no, not anymore. No, please, please, God help me. No, please, I have to finish this. So I just said that. I mean, I'm not perfect. I'm just trying to be optimistic with my work. And if I wanted other people to read it and see this, I just have to publish it or try to publish it. And so I said, well, okay, goodbye. And now I'm working on another project.
Yeah. And now another one. Yes. Thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you very much.
Dr. Athalia Ruiz Medrano is the author of 11 books, including her latest, Indigenous Manuscripts, Paintings, and Politics in Mexico, Colonial and National Records. She is a professor at the National Institute of Anthropology and History in Mexico, and she was on the University of Arkansas campus yesterday as the guest of the U of A's Latin American and Latino Studies program and the Department of Art. This is Ozarks at Large.